Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dave Licken to Licken on Lending. We're trying to run the switchboard here, and we're having a little bit of a digital effect going on, but this is Monday, and it is March 14th, and we're going to be talking to you about LO compensation. Looking forward to having you on the program with us, as you do each and every week. Do we have Andy Shell, and we have Alice Alvey. Drew is our producer, is off and is taking a day off, as well as is our friend Joe Farr. So, Alice, Andy, are you both on the line?
Yeah, we are. It's
good to know that you're both here. I'm trying to run the switchboard here, and it says the new normal opening music is playing, but we're not having any luck with it, as it would seem to be a big challenge. So let's open up with talking about what's going on in the markets. Every day, every time we start the program, so far usually brings it on and opens it up and talking to what's going on in the markets today. And we are having ourselves a nice improvement in the market. 11:30 seconds, we're up for the day. Pricing is obviously up. Rates are down. Interesting, the Dow is off by 120 points today. That is quite significant. I'm sure it has to do with a lot of what's going on or in Japan over the weekend. I'm sure many of you are listening to the reports of the tragedy that happened in Japan. It's definitely affecting the global markets, and anytime you see that, what's bad for the market seems to be good for the mortgage industry, at least as it relates to interest rates. So our thoughts and prayers go out to many out there in Japan. We hope that you are paying attention to the market. Today is one of those market days to be watching it. We've got some price improvements that are there. Last week, which is really kind of interesting, concerns about the local global economic growth was continuing, and continued violence in the Middle East continued to cause rates to improve throughout last week. We have strong demand for this week's Treasury is what's anticipated. So we see some things developing that are fairly positive for the interest rates while they're developing and unraveling in parts of the world. So what's bad again for the world economic environment seems to be overall good for us. What we've got coming up on the calendar this week is Tuesday. We have the New York Empire State Index, also the import prices. We also have Tuesday the FOMC meeting that's going to be coming out with information that should be rather significant. Job claims is on Thursday, March 17th, as well as industrial production on Thursday, the 7th. Yes, that is also on Thursday. So we've got a big week on the calendar. Leading indicators are coming out as well on Thursday. Folks, this is one of those days where it seems like with so much going on in the market, you really need to have the latest and greatest information on what's happening with the world. An MBS quote line brings that to us. We're going to try to go to a quick ad, and we'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Licken on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Licken.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken, and we are certainly having some feedback in my ear. So while we bring Alice on to get us the update on the legislative update, we are going to have, I'm going to dial back in and try to get a clearer line. Alice, I'm going to turn it over to you for just a bit.
Okay, Dave, sounds great. Well, hello, everybody. And as you know, we're down in countdown mode now for loan officer compensation. So we have 14 business days left. I hope you have your plans ready. There's lots to think about in this. And I know many of you maybe put the numbers together on paper, but have lots of questions about maybe other companies' plans and how to really go about preparing your staff for the big change. So we are going to be talking about that in more detail in our next segment. Also on Dodd-Frank, I want to make sure you're aware of a couple additional things. April 1st is also the date for appraiser independence. This primarily impacts community banks, credit unions, those of you who didn't sell loans directly to Fannie or Freddie, who had to follow HBCC requirements in the past. One of the biggest changes in this is just simply that, you know, appraiser independence is now a federal law. So you've got to make sure you've got procedures in place and written policies, because you'll certainly be audited for that the next time the FDIC comes around or any state auditor. I also want to give you a heads up that we're going to start watching for July 21st. Yes, thank goodness summer is getting a little closer here, but the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is due to start taking over some of HUD's functions as soon as July 21st. The transition is going to start to occur. So if you thought of that, you know, HUD has traditionally had its single-family, multifamily, and the regulatory division, so this regulatory piece where HUD has watched over the SAFE Act, RESPA, and interstate land sales is all going to transfer over to the CFPB. So we have a few things actually hanging out there with FHA. One is, who's going to replace Dave Stevens? I haven't had a chance to look. For those of you who missed that announcement last week,
yeah.
Dave Stevens did resign. Glad to have you back, Dave. And at
yes.
the same time, the Office of Inspector General actually published the audit, which really, it's hard to read between the lines a little bit on the audit. Certainly it's bad that we've got only 15 lenders that could have potentially cost the HUD fund $23 million. The information from that report was leaking out all last year. Different lenders were finding out about, you know, HUD writing them up. And this is a consolidated report that was just issued. You can find it if you use your search engine and key in OIG HUD audit and put in 2011, and this report should come up so that you can see who's on the list, and you can see what exactly was going on. It is a heads up to DE lenders on underwriting. Make sure your underwriters know what they're doing. So this was Operation Watchdog that the OIG wrapped up, and we are looking to, obviously, as you look at the list, you realize, okay, some of those lenders did actually close high-risk loans, and HUD, in the same time, is kind of getting slapped for letting lenders be around so long. So HUD does have new authority going forward. They have stronger authority. You want to make sure you have all your systems in place for them. From a rules standpoint, you know, we had that big chunk of truth in lending rules, and some of them were pretty crazy. All that's on hold now. So those of you who are watching, TILA changes that would have been impacting reverse mortgages and other disclosures, you can breathe a sigh of relief. We really only have one proposed rule that's open for comment right now, and that's about Fannie and Freddie prohibiting transfer fees. So this particular rule would prohibit any kind of a transfer, these agencies from purchasing any kind of loan with a transfer fee. Now, we're talking about homeowners association in a situation with a condo. So a homeowners association would be an exception. They could charge a transfer fee. But a developer, builder, seller, any of those condo agreements that have those types of transfer fees that can be paid every single time a unit is sold would be prohibited. We're watching a few bills, too, but nothing that's as major as what's going on with loan officer compensation. We've got House Bill 769 that would require that credit scores be included with the free credit report. We're also monitoring a couple of flood insurance bills, and, you know, again, nothing super important at the moment, but we're watching just a few minor things that will be coming up from a legislative process. So, we're going to be talking about loan officer compensation as we get into this next piece, and that's my update at the moment, Dave.
That is your update. Well, we thank you so much, Alice. You know what? It's technology is one of those things that we are going to be talking about a little bit later in the program as well. We get Tony Garitano on, and when it works, it's wonderful. But when it doesn't, my gosh, it was sounding so digital, I had to dial back in. Thank you for covering that. Alice, we're going to be getting into, and for our listeners, we are going to be having on the phone and on the program today at Glenn Corso. Alice, Glenn, and I had some amazing conversations, and we're so excited to be bringing you an update on some of the things that we've learned just recently about the LO comp, and now we're going to have an extensive discussion on that. Also, Alice, you might want to tell our listeners about the 17th, this 17th, March 17th, this Thursday, I'm sorry, trying to say.
Isn't it St. Patrick's Day, and it's a national holiday?
I know it. And we're going to, and isn't that interesting? And Glenn, we're going to talk about Glenn, I'm sure we'll get into it, but the Fed's posted the fact that they're going to have a conference
webinar,
call
yes.
to answer all the questions and clear up all the confusion.
Right.
If you believe that, then we've got some land for you to pry. But anyway, as the saying goes, but I think that's on the 17th, Alice, is it not?
Yes,
this
it
Thursday?
Is. So yep, and for those of you who say, oh, I've got appointments all day, I don't know how I'm going to make that, it is going to be recorded. If you go to that part of the Fed website, they also had a piece out there on the risk-based pricing disclosure. So they do record these events. You will be able to have access to it at a later time for those of you thinking, how the heck are they going to have, you know, 500,000 people on a phone call, that you can listen to it later. Also, Dave, while I have the floor again, just a reminder, everybody's got to get their NMLS call reports ready. For those of
yes.
you who aren't used to filing quarterly, we're going to talk about this on next week's show in detail about what's in it, what you have to be aware of, and how to get yourself prepared to file it on time. So you'll need first quarter's data, end of March 31st here, calendar quarter, submitted to NMLS by May 15th.
Thank you so much, Alice. Looking forward to getting into that discussion. Call reports for independent mortgage bankers. Who would ever thought we'd see the day? I will be right back after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. And each and every week we talk to the Profit Doctor. He helps us fix what's ailing the bottom line. And Andy Schell is that Profit Doctor. He's also, I'm privileged to have him as my business partner. Andy, what do you have for us today?
Well, hi, Dave. You know, you were just talking about the call reports. And I spent 20 years in regulated depository mortgage lending where we had to do a call report every single month. And then I went on and I was president of a mortgage company. And I thought, yippee, I don't have to do a call report anymore. But it's back. How'd that happen?
It's back. Go figure.
But, you know, for all of our clients that are, and for the folks that work with Alice that are doing their financials the way we recommend and tracking the systems the way we recommend, it's going to be more work, but it's not the end of the world. As long as people are capturing their data right, they're going to be fine. But, hey,
yep.
Dave, my piece today for the Profit Doctor is a little bit interesting, I think. It's about mortgage on Broadway.
Always. What do you mean a little interesting? It's always interesting.
Mortgage on Broadway. Dave, have you ever been to a Broadway show in New York?
I have, and enjoy it.
You know, a friend of mine saw a Broadway show yesterday, and this reminded me of the Broadway shows I saw with my family earlier in the year during New Year's Eve or New Year's when we went to New York. And, you know, if you think about it, for a Broadway show to be successful, it takes a lot of people doing their job perfectly each time. The actors are the face of the show, but without the musicians and the technical support from the sound guys and the stage management, the whole show falls apart. To make the show great, they all have to work together, and they all have to work together in a stressful situation. So it's up to the stage managers and the orchestra conductor to keep everything moving smootly. And like in Mortgage on Broadway, loan officers
mortgage
are like the actors. They're the face of the consumers when we're talking about mortgage banking, and the ops team and the accounting department are like the musicians and the stage managers. The musicians rely on the actors to do a great job every time, and the actors rely on the musicians and the stage managers to do a great job every time, because the audience isn't happy if the lights go out or there's bad sound, you hear feedback, or you can't hear the actors. So just like on Broadway, where we've got a face, but we also have it's a team. We have a stressful environment where many people have to do their job perfectly. Different people have different roles, but everyone has to work together to be successful. So today, you know, there's a couple of reasons to be stressful, a couple of reasons why there's some stress in the environment, but, you know, there's also lots of reasons for hope. And, Dave, you know, you and I wrote an article on Hope for the Future that's actually running in the Mortgage Banker magazine this month. It'll
be
out
this month, in the month of March.
Day now. But the stress that we're feeling, the stress that we're feeling is coming from a lot of different areas. It's coming from new rules that we're having to follow and changes in how we get paid and new regulations we have to follow. And on top of all that, we've got changes in volume that are happening. And with all this change, all this disruption, I don't get to do what I've always done. We're also being asked to do more with mortgage companies today where it feels like the world's changing around us. We've got loan officers are being asked to do more by entering HMDA data into the system during application, and, you know, what a pain. And we've also got maybe originators are having to do commission sheets, and that's going to get more complicated. And the operations teams are asked to do more, and the technology team is asked to make all the systems talk together because we want to eliminate dual entry of data. We want the entry to the data to move seamlessly between all the systems, and that doesn't always work well. And management is assuming that accounting gets all the data they need to quickly prepare meaningful financial reports so management can make decisions. But management should really make sure that all those pieces are running smoothly. You can get a really good-looking report, but if the data is bad, the reports are bad. So don't just assume that it's right. We need to make certain that all the pieces are flowing together, all the technology is working, the data from origination, all the HMDA data, all the origination data, and we're going to have that stuff for this new call report. All that information has got to go into the system, flow smoothly through the system and out in reports and into accounting so that all the numbers can come together so you can get your KPIs that work. It's all challenging, and it can lead to disruption unless everyone works together to make it all work. So we really need to focus to do our job in excellence and then ask, what more can we do? It's going to take leadership. Owners and managers of companies must present a clear vision for future success to the branches and the staff with a focus on profitability, because it takes teamwork to succeed. We can all succeed together if we all pitch in, do our jobs well, look for how we can help each other and make the company better while we focus on volume and ROI. Because here's the thing, it cannot be about me. It has to be about us. That's the way it's going to be to survive in this environment. Mortgage banking has to be about us. The mantra of "it's all about me" is going to be a recipe for disaster. We've got to focus on how we can work together to be successful. And I know this may sound like, well, how does that have to do with money or finance or profit doctrine? Well, these are essential elements for financial success. If we do these things well, if we work together as a team, have solid leadership, have the ability to get data pulled together accurately, and everybody working for a common goal, it really will lead to a more efficient operation that has a better customer face, the customers are happy, and we'll make more money. And that's the profit doctor for today, Dave.
That's the profit doctor. I like it. You know, the mortgage, you know, Broadway show. That would be quite an interesting Broadway production. And sometimes I feel like I can relate to your comments extra special today. Today our producer's out, and I'm running both the show. Joe was out, so I'm doing his segment. And then on top of that, we had technology issues. You really do appreciate when everything works well and when everyone's functioning in their roles in the perfect way and everything comes together. And you see how they pull that off flawlessly, show in, two shows a night oftentimes in Broadway, and it just consistently. A movie, you produce it once, it's out, it's in the can, it's run through the theaters. But the Broadway act, that's a great analogy, Andy. I love that one. Good job.
We have to continually work together, and it doesn't just run on automatic. And when we think it's running perfectly is when we just need to keep working together.
Well, I think we take a lot of that for granted. I certainly have. I'm learning to appreciate it more. Thank you so much, Profit Doctor, for bringing us a great show, the Mortgage Broadway Show. I tell you, that's one, Alice. It's featuring Alice Alvey, starring in it. All right, we'll be back right after this brief break. And remember, we've got Glenn Corso joining us in just a few moments to talk to us about ElloComp, answer more of the questions, and there's so many. Can't wait to get into that segment. We'll be right back after this brief moment.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact our Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Monday, March 14th, and we're talking to you about ELO compensation here in just a few minutes. But one of the things that has been so encouraging to me is how some of the vendors have begun to respond to the technology issues, or technology with technology solutions to the issues of ELO comp. Joining us today again as a part of regular, now a part of the program on a regular basis, is Tony Garitano. Tony, good to have you with us and on the program. What's going on in the world of technology? Give us an update.
Well, this week, Dave, I wanted to talk to you about the problem of mortgage fraud. There are some recent data that came out of InterThings, which is a fraud detection vendor, that I wanted to share with you that I thought was relatively interesting, unfortunately in a not-so-good way. But they said that according to the most recent data that they have available to them, previously localized risks in one or more zip code can actually pose a danger of spreading throughout an entire metropolitan area. And that I thought was a little bit shocking that, you know, localized risk in one city or town can turn into big risk over, an entire metropolitan area if it goes unchecked. The example that they gave, Dave, was Chicago. Chicago's zip code of 60621 has been the riskiest zip code in the United States for three consecutive quarters, according to InterThings. Chicago's overall risk has increased dramatically since the second quarter of 2010 from what they call moderate to what they now call a very high risk. In the fourth quarter, Illinois' overall quarter-on-quarter jump went up 26 index points.
Wow.
So you can, that's a lot. I mean, so you can see why the problems in Chicago kind of multiplied and made what could have been a smaller problem into a bigger problem for all of Illinois. Mortgage fraud, although people don't necessarily know, is also very prevalent in REO sales and short sales. They're saying that fraud in this area has increased by 25% over the last year.
That's interesting, which may explain the reason why there's so many problems that are following up on that area of business. So that's interesting.
And Kevin Koop, so obviously he's a little bit biased because he's a technology provider, but he said, quote, with employment/income and identity fraud risk up more than 25% throughout all of 2010, lenders need to be more vigilant about using fraud detection systems during refinancings, modifications, and purchase transactions that involve the resale of distressed properties. And I just thought sharing these numbers with you and with your audience can hopefully give us all a better understanding of, you know, what a big problem fraud is and how it's not going away and how it may be a small problem today, but it only gets bigger and bigger and bigger until we as an industry come together and start automating our processes a little bit better and looking for fraud at the point of sale and trying to be more creative than those people who are trying to defraud us.
Which is so interesting about this, Tony, is the reason we're, the next segment we're getting into is a detailed discussion about LO Comp, which is a response to a lot of the issues related to the industry, abuses within our industry. And it's interesting to note that fraud in specific markets is going up. And I think as you sit and think about it, you go, how could fraud in one particular immediate area affect its spread throughout a community? In one sense, we are an industry that is very relational. We're talking to each other on a very regular basis. And so if someone's starting to get away with things in one particular market, if you don't have the right character, I can see how that could spread to other adjacent markets or in a bigger way into a larger MSA area, a larger metro area. So initially it kind of sounds surprising, but I think as people start getting away and making money doing fraudulent things, short-term success as it may be, I guess I can understand that. So well, thank you so much, Tony, for bringing us an update and all that's going on. It's good to have you be a part of the program on a regular basis. Much appreciated, Tony.
Thank you for having me back, Dave.
Good, good. And you've got the blogs out and the radio. Give them your website address one more time, please.
You can find me, all of our blogs, all of our magazines, all of our videos, and Dave's blog as well at progressinlending.com.
Thank you so much. So good to be with you. We'll be right back after this brief word.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel Trot represents a wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Lincoln. It is Monday, March 14th. I say that every time. People say, why do you say that all the time? Because you can download this program by going to the website, lickinonlending.com. You can download this program, listen to it multiple times. Many people are dialing in from literally all over the country. It's so refreshing for me to hear our efforts that go into this. We don't get paid for this. We've got some sponsors that help defray the cost of this production and what we do. But we're doing this as a community service to the industry to help the industry sort out so many of the issues that are going on out there. Certainly, no issue more confusing, more convoluted, more causing more anxiety in the industry than LO compensation. Joining us this week again, a voice that is very familiar to our audience, Glenn Corso. He's the co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project, which is an advocacy organization representing independent organizations across the country. And we're thrilled to have Glenn Corso on the program again. I don't know why, Glenn, I was having so much trouble getting the word advocacy out, but I think that's because we are so struggling for strong advocacy in this industry, and we're glad to have you doing that and providing that. Welcome to the program, Glenn.
Well, thank you very much, Dave.
It's good to have you here. And last week, I was in Phoenix, Arizona, working with several of our clients out there. The hot topic, Glenn, is LO compensation. So the first thing when I run into one of these issues, I go, now that's something I've never heard about. I get on the phone with two people or three people, Andy Schell, I always run it by him. I'm on the phone with him regularly as my business partner. But then I get on the phone with Alice Alvey and Glenn Corso. And we've turned up some issues that people are struggling with. Yet on the whole area of broker compensation, wholesale compensation, I really want to get into a number of these scenarios. And there's also, like, employee loans. Alice was in an office. We're going to get into some of that discussion. But anyway, Glenn, I want to say thank you for joining it. I always appreciate you so much being a resource to the industry and also a resource to this program and our listeners across the country. Alice, I would like to open up and get into the discussion that you and I were having where, and I explain, I want to go into the broker broker compensation issue. Now, I was in both the clients we have in the Phoenix area, and I believe that both of them are listening in on the conversation. Appreciate them so much. We appreciate them openly, honestly rolling out to us their programs, and they're now rolling them out to their LO officers. So I want to get into the issue that we got to, but before we do that, I remember I want to cover first kind of globally broad concept of what we're seeing develop out there. Banks, large regulated institutions, seem to be going towards a model of a higher base salary and a much lower percentage of the loan amount compensation plan. There's been less talk with that group, at least the ones that conversations I've been involved in. We'll get Glenn's opinion on this in a minute, where there's less incentive compensation beyond that. I know some of them have that, but they just want to roll that much out, and most of the big banks are not allowing any brokering out of any sort in any way, shape, or form. So we have the banks taking a very high salary, low comp. That's on one side of the equation, and we have independent mortgage bankers out there on the other side. We're seeing some compensation levels that are just somewhat absurd. Alice had listened to someone paying Alice, am I correct on this? 175 basis points out. Is that correct?
Yeah, there was. I've got one of my customers calling me, who's a lender, saying that the broker down the street and who does a mix of broker and lender business is advertising out there, hey, come work for me. You know, I'm going to pay you 175 basis points. And you just kind of look at them going, how the heck are you going to make that commitment right out of the chute? And they're kind of in a panic, thinking that on the surface their loan officers are going to think that's a better plan. So we had to talk them off the ledge on that one. That it's really about the whole part of the plan. And I always say you can't know the plan unless you got the rate sheet right there with it.
All right, and that's there you hit to the nail on the head right there. So many of these that are rolling out with the large, huge, seemingly crazy percentages have got a rate sheet that either margins have got to be squeezed to a certain degree, but certainly they've had to build it into the rate sheet and puts them at a significant disadvantage. So those are the two perspectives that we're seeing out there, the two streams paying. I've even heard of 200, 225, 250 I heard out there. I don't even know what that company's rate sheet will have to look like to have that in there. And then we're having the banks and seems like everything in between. So that's out there in the market. That's getting announced. And, Glenn, I want to bring you now in. Is that what you're seeing with your organization as you talk to some of your members, kind of the range? Is there anything that we're not covering in that?
Well, Dave, I think the only thing that you're not covering in that, and this is more of a company consideration, I think, than the individual loan officers, but it does affect them, of course, is that a number of companies are really trying to address sort of a two-for-one shot, that they're trying to address the wage and hour concerns. As you know, there's been that recurrent litigation. I think Quicken Loans is in that litigation right now over whether or not they should be paying overtime compensation to employees, whether they should be paying at least a minimum wage, et cetera. So what companies are doing is that they're setting they call it a salary or a draw for individual loan originators that at least equals minimum wage times 40 hours per week. They're telling loan officers, we expect you to get your work done within 40 hours. If you need more than 40 hours, you cannot work overtime without getting written management approval. And then they're saying, and by the way, this being paid to you is a draw, and it'll be draw against commissions that you earn, so that first you have to generate sufficient commissions to at least equal the draw you're being paid, and then over and above that, of course, you'll be paid as you normally would for the commissions you generate in excess of the draw.
Okay, so let's dive into the salary component or the draw component, the hourly component. That is not technically a part of the new rule, the Federal Reserve rule, and I think it's important to bring out that distinction. But it is absolutely something that's been there for some period of time related to the Department of Labor. Are we correct am I correct in that?
You are absolutely correct, and that's why I sort of opened my remarks by saying that companies are attempting to address two issues at once with that sort of approach. the Department of Labor issue that you just raised, and then, of course, LO Comp.
Yep. I think one of our clients I was talking to last week says, you know what, Dave, I'm really not worried about that. I'm not paid an hourly wage. I'm not paid a minimum wage. I'm not paid anything to our LOs, and it's never been an issue. And so I'm just not going to worry about that. Here's the problem with that, to you listeners that may be having that. And I'm going to make the statement, then Glenn, if you'd comment, Alice, follow in on it. The problem is we as an industry have not faced the scrutiny that we're about to face. We've got call reports coming out. There's this thing called the plaintiff bar. Now, Glenn has a legal background, as an attorney, has a long background in that, strong background in there. There's this thing called a plaintiff bar. I didn't even know what a plaintiff bar was for years until we started doing legal expert witness work. But that's a group that whole business is focused in on representing plaintiffs. It's suing people, suing companies typically, when there are issues where they see opportunities to make money. And Glenn, if you would just kind of comment in on that. I mean, those that are saying it really hasn't been an issue, so it's been a part of law. Department of Labor hasn't been in my office. We're too low on the radar screen to have them ever be an issue. What are you saying to some of those folks? I think it's irresponsible.
Well, yeah. See, what I'm saying, Dave, is there are plaintiffs' attorneys out there that have websites that act as advertisements to people. In fact, there's one law firm in particular, whose name I won't use on this program, but one law firm in particular that has made a specialty out of suing mortgage banking companies on behalf of their loan officer employees for overtime. And what happens is that they find some former employees, typically, and then they file a class action suit on behalf of current and former loan officers. And then before you know it, the company is embroiled in litigation. And this affects not just giant companies like Quicken Loans. It affects mid-size and even smaller companies, because essentially the feeling is that most mortgage bankers, particularly in years past, really didn't address that issue the way it needed to be addressed, with the whole thing about, do your loan officers qualify for one of the exemptions under the wage and hour law? Are they engaged in outside sales for existence and for example, and therefore they're exempt? A lot of companies use the administrative exemption for their people that spend most of their time inside, and the Department of Labor has knocked that down, and now the courts may very well knock that down as well. So if that happens, then those companies that have been relying on that exemption are going to have a big problem. But again, there are law firms out there that are sort of trolling for clients. If you've ever had a loan originator leave you, and wasn't on the best of terms, or they were somewhat disgruntled, or the loan originator really doesn't have much of a conscience and looks for a way to make some easy money by participating in a lawsuit against you, everybody is vulnerable, no matter how small the company.
That's a great point. Alice, how big of a problem do you think this is across the country?
Well, in terms of, I think there's another angle to that. So I think it could be a big issue that lenders want to protect themselves on. That. I mean, I'll always say that's the difference between some of the legal opinions that you'll hear on this who say, okay, I can defend you in court, versus the other voices that are out there saying, no, you don't want to end up in court. You don't want to be someone on the radar that these companies can make an easy target. So you want to just have conservative best practices that will keep you way away from that. Another heads up, I guess, I would give on that same topic is, states need money, and state auditors will most likely be doing targeted audits to this topic, just like some of you went through just a licensing audit where the state didn't necessarily go through everything in your shop. They just strictly came in and checked to see if all your LOs were licensed. I wouldn't be surprised if this hits their list, maybe later this year or first part of next year, where they start going, hey, let's go target this now. It's an easy target audit. Look at payroll records, see if they're in compliance with Reg Z.
Especially when you hear that fraud is up in certain markets, which is just astounding. I've heard this report several times that when volumes are down, fraud goes up. That just continues to focus like a laser on us. We are you know, what does the military do? They paint something with a color when they launch a rocket up above and they drop a bomb. They're painting it so the missile knows exactly where to go. Folks, nothing could have more of a target finder on it than the issues that we've got going on. We are subject to being blown up if you're not paying attention to these. So we're talking about ELOCOMP. It's an important part of it. Even though technically paying a minimum wage or some type of salary component, whether it be based on minimum wage, whether it's forgivable or not forgivable, we're hearing a lot of people saying if someone leaves, Glenn, they are not being charged with that. They're not being asked to pay back a salary that they were paid on the minimum wage. They're just being let go. But if they stay and they're there and participating, it does anything they earn, the compensation typically and for the most part is in effect they're paying back what was the salary or what they've accumulated in salary. If they fell short in a month, they're paying that back out of the compensation. Is that consistent with what you're seeing?
Well, yes, except, Dave, what I've been telling our members is don't use the phrase paying back because
oh,
under
yeah.
wage
okay.
and hour law, you're not supposed to be paying your compensation back. So instead I say look at it that you're calculating incentive compensation over and above the base compensation that you're paying. And the way you calculate your incentive compensation is that you first discount the incentive that's earned until it equals the base compensation that's paid. And then once it starts to exceed the base compensation, that's additional money that's going to be paid to the loan originator.
You know what? I want to come.
And excuse me, you're also exactly right, though. If, for example, you have a loan originator where you pay them base compensation, minimum wage compensation, they don't originate any loans in the month, and then at the end of the month they resign, that's money that's been paid to them. That's their money, and you can't recover that from them.
That's right. And the reason I bring this up is these are terms I'm hearing, Glenn, consistently over and over by our customer base, paybacks. And I know some of these terms are toxic to a regulator that's coming in there. And like one guy just texted me and said, my God, it feels like how the heck do I talk to these guys? I'm just using a term that seems like an industry standard. And I find out that I create a risk for that. This is just so frustrating. You can just feel the frustration with so many people out there, Glenn. It's kind of over the top. You can't use this term, but if you say it this way, it's okay. If you say it that way, it's not. I want to go over to Andy Schell. Andy, Profit Doctor, we are going to have to learn how to account for things on the salary side. What are the consequences from an accounting complex, what Glenn was just talking about?
Well, first off, this reminds me of when my son was about 10 years old, I looked outside and I saw him out there with a broomstick heating the eave of the house. And I went out there and go, what are you doing? He goes, well, Dad, there's a bunch of wasps up there. I'm going to knock them down. And I thought, oh, my gosh, no, wait, stop. No, don't do that. You know, as the wasps were swarming on him. So it's like, you know, don't poke a wasp nest with a stick. If the DOL says the law is what it is, then you're going to pay people minimum wage. So don't be messing with it. You know, don't be poking a wasp nest with a stick. If the rules are the rules, this is from the accounting perspective. The rules are the rules. So it doesn't matter if you like it, don't like it. It is what it is. There's no question that this DOL ruling is in effect. So just do it. Pay the rate you're supposed to pay. Don't try to get around it. Just pay it, and it'll come through normal salary and through compensation, and you're going to have to pay there'll be more you're going to have to pay, including the FICA match and all of that, but just, you know, don't poke a wasp nest, just do it.
Well, and to that whole point, Dave, to the person who was sending you that message, it is true that in this entire topic, we have to settle on what is a generally accepted terminology. I go from one event to the next, one customer to the next, and everyone is using different terminologies for things. So when someone asks a question, can I do this? Is this acceptable? You have to spend 15 minutes just trying to define each term and make sure we're talking about the same thing. That's what we found when you know, the three of us were talking this week about, you know, to ask a simple question, can you pay somebody differently for FHA loans? The answer on the surface is no. Then someone starts going, however, what about this? What about that? What about this? And, you know, the answers change weekly.
And that's the thing that's probably most frustrating about this is you start playing situational. It's almost – it's not situational ethics, situations. I don't know how else to put it. It's just – it can vary so much. We're going to get in right after the break a specific situation that Alice and I ran into this week. And we've got Glenn on the program to specifically go to this. So we're going to drop the talking about the DL, Department of Labor, DOL issue. We're going to dive into the loan comp related to brokered out loans and employee loans. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back, everybody. We have our special guest, Glenn Corso, co-founder of the Community Mortgage Banking Project, an advocacy organization that represents independent mortgage bankers of all sizes. And Glenn, it's so good to have you be a part of it. It's also interesting to note that you were previously employed by the PMI Group as a senior vice president, and I believe it was running industry government relations. Is that what it was? And public policy, is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly right.
And for many of you know that Glenn was also legal counsel for the NBA many, many years ago. And I think you're really filling a need. And, Glenn, I want to talk just for a brief moment before we get back into LO Comp about your organization. Give us a quick update. Who should be joining your organization? And what are the benefits of being a part of it?
Well, Dave, we have 43 members now. They are all independent mortgage banking companies. And I'd say the benefits of being part of our group is twofold. First is the advocacy on behalf of independent mortgage bankers. You know, there isn't any other organization out there that represents only independent mortgage banking companies the way that we do. Second thing is information. Not only information that you can read in the trade press, but actually up-to-date information that either we or our lobbyists have gathered directly from the participants in all these regulatory and legislative actions. So I'd say that's the two benefits. For instance, we have a regular thing with our members. We have been providing them with guidance on how to comply with the loan originator compensation regulations. We've been having regular discussions with the Federal Reserve staff. We turn right around and convey all that information to our members, even as the answers that we've gotten from the Federal Reserve staff over time between last August when this rule first came out and today, those answers in some cases have changed. They've shifted positions on us. And though our members aren't happy about that, they are happy to get the information firsthand from us.
That's so valuable, and I think it's knowing that you're inside the Beltway, you can drive to their offices and get some information specific. It's so important that you, anyone who's an independent mortgage banker, be aware of this resource. Join it. We have clients that have recently joined you. We're recommending many of our clients become a member of this outstanding the Community Mortgage Banking Project, an advocacy group. Very, very important. Glenn, last week Alice and I were both out in the field, and we were both in with clients. I want to talk to you about one scenario that I already talked to you about, discuss a brokered out loan. And here's the scenario, folks. We have an independent mortgage banker who has got products that they offer, but they're trying to be able to help all of their consumers that come to them, as well as help their loan officers make as much money. They do allow some brokering out, as many organizations do. They were running into this problem. Can we pay someone, a loan officer, differently? In this case, and in many cases, they prefer paying them less for brokered out product to incentivize them to run it through the bank. And the scenario is, in this particular case, and it's interesting, we're going to lay up two scenarios for you, Glenn, and then Alice and I are going to jump in, and Andy jump in and add some color, ask some questions of it, because this is the biggest area everyone seems to be struggling with out there. So the scenario I was in is the only product they can broker out is that product which they do not offer. So in that particular case, we came to the determination, hopefully correct, Glenn opined to this, but that they could pay a lower compensation for that product. For the, to those loan officers, they could pay a less of a percentage of the dollar amount that they funded because they didn't offer it. However, if they offered that product, for example, if they allowed their loan officer to broker out that product, the same product that they offered internally, the compensation had to be the same. And just as a footnote, more and more companies are saying, we're just going to stop all brokering out of any product that we offer in-house. So, Glenn, are they correct? Were they correct in saying, were we correct in saying that they could pay a different compensation because they did not offer that product through any of their banking channels?
Yes, you were correct. In fact, we've had discussions with the Federal Reserve staff exactly on this same issue. What we were cautioned by the staff is that you're on very safe ground if it's a product that you don't offer, because otherwise, and I know this is going to sound a little nuts, but otherwise, if you pay differently for a loan where you do offer the product, then you could be held to be violating the rule, because the actual act of brokering out could be a proxy for the terms and conditions of the loan.
Correct.
I'll give you an example. If in fact it's a type of loan that you offer, and the loan officer looks at the credit of the borrower and says, oh boy, this is a very weak credit, I think we better broker this out instead of doing it ourselves. There, the Fed would say, well, no, that's a term and condition of the loan. You know, they had some discussion in the commentary about how you can't, the borrower's FICO score, for example, is a term and condition of the loan. Therefore, you couldn't pay the loan officer less for brokering that loan out because the borrower had a weak credit score.
Oh,
however,
boy,
the borrower was seeking a type of loan that you just flat out don't offer, you're on very safe ground then for saying, yes, you can broker that loan out, number one, and number two, we will pay you less for that loan than we would for a loan where we end up funding it and closing it in our own name.
Alice,
so
you and I talked about this. I was going to say, jump in, because I know, where is the line? Go for
it. I was just going to say, yeah, so here's the line. So if it's we don't offer it and you pay less, is that what if the – so it always has to be and you're paying less?
Well, again, Alice, you don't have to pay less, but what I'm saying is that if you don't offer it, you could be justified in paying less than for a loan that you broker out, provided that you don't offer that loan. If you do offer that loan and you pay less, then you run the risk that some examiner comes in and says, oh, you offer this kind of loan, but you brokered it out because Joe Smith here, the borrower, they had only a 620 FICO score. So that's a proxy, and therefore you were paying based on terms and conditions. You're in violation.
Yeah. Well, so would you consider FHA to be then a bright line? Because there are a lot of credit unions out there, and even more and more companies that are saying, well, I'm going to be then only a sponsored originator under FHA, but I'm a lender. I underwrite all my conventional or all my portfolio, and the only thing I broker out is my FHA. Is FHA a pretty bright line then to say that's clearly a product I'm not offering as long as I don't have a 96.5 LTV program that I offer internally?
Yes, I'd say so for sure. And, of course, assuming that, and I'm assuming this from your question, that you're not an approved FHA mortgagee. If you're not an approved FHA mortgagee and you don't offer that that, you know, in other words, you broker out all your FHA loans, I think you're fine. If you're an approved mortgagee and you still broker out your FHA loans, you know, be prepared for a lot of explanations.
It is a great point. Now, let's go to the next one. This is where I thought Alice might go, is what is the difference between a product and a credit card or a term and a condition? Let me lay out the scenario again. Same company, sitting there talking about that. The next meeting they invited me into was a wholesale lender walked through the door and said, why aren't you sending me your loans that have a lower FICO on this particular product? I know you offer that product to this FICO level, but if you offer all the loans that fall below that FICO level, send it to us, broker it out to us, because technically it's a separate product. And I go, that seemed to make logical sense, but I've been pondering that over the weekend. Glenn, where does it become a product, and when is it a – is there a bright line? Is there any you see the situation.
I do see the situation, Dave, and I'd say this. If in fact, the outlet for this kind of loan, we're assuming it's a conventional loan, right?
Yes. In this particular case, okay. It is.
Okay. So assuming that it is, because FHA raises a whole other set of issues when it's based on FICO score. But
right.
if it's a conventional loan and the company closes and funds the loans in their own name, except if the borrower's FICO score is below a certain level, if the company has an outlet, in other words, if they're selling direct to Fannie or Freddie, or they're selling to an aggregator that would take the loan no matter what the FICO score is, as long as it went through the agency's automated underwriting system and got an accept. But if they have an internal policy that if it's below a certain credit score, we will broker it out instead, I'd say that you're going to have a problem with the Fed if you pay less on those loans. I think the issue is going to be that the Fed has commentary in their rule about how you can't pay less based on FICO score. So I think there, as long as they could submit it themselves, but for their own reasons, their own risk management reasons, they choose not to and instead prefer to broker it out, I don't think that's going to justify paying different compensation.
And
okay.
I think the biggest point is that you're making that I want to make sure people are understanding is even if it's lower, because I've run into so many folks that would say, why would the Fed have a problem if I'm going to be paying lower for this product? And I try and impress upon them that, well, you know, it's the comparison. Decreases and increases are a violation. Something that could be higher could have been pushed much higher as different products. Is this the right product for the customer? Decreases do matter. And I want to also, on the same subject then, the idea of my company setting its own minimum credit score is a problem potentially if an aggregator will take a lower score that you're approved with. So in FHA, if I have a compare ratio problem and I have to try and make sure my compare ratio is going up proportionately so that I get out of trouble or avoid trouble with HUD, if I'm, you know, teetering up and maybe I'm over the 150%, you know, compare ratio, I'm creeping up on 200, could I essentially have a problem because my investors allow those lower scores, right? So that's why I'm just telling people, this gets so dicey, have one comp plan. Trying to split things between products really can start to unravel.
Oh, Alice, you're exactly right. And I should have added, I just didn't want to get off track, but I should have added that I advise every company that we deal with, don't have a minimum FICO score cutoff that exceeds any of the agency requirements. For example, with FHA, you know, FHA's minimum is 580 with the minimum down payment. And my advice to companies is, look, you can have an underwriting policy where you look at a borrower's credit and you may decide, gosh, you know, it just doesn't measure up and here's the five reasons why. And one of those reasons may be the behavior they've exhibited that's resulted in the low credit score. but to have a decision where, gosh, you're at, you know, 580 and I only do 620 and above, you're laying yourself open to exposure.
We've got 1 minute left. I'd love to thank you so much, Glenn. We're going to get into employee loans next week. We're going to get into the call report next week. Glenn, if there's any developments, give me a call that you're seeing. We'd love to have you on just for a quick report. If not, even just cover more questions. Folks, thank you so much for being a part of the program. We appreciate you dialing in and telling many of your friends about our program each and every week. Again, we're doing this for you as mortgage professionals, producing a radio program for you, the mortgage industry. Thank you so much for being a part of the program. We have a great week.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.